If you think you can't go from politics to the divine, Carol Gold and Steve Clark are about to take you above the fray. The only agenda here is to empower you to think for yourself, ask more questions, and trust your own truth. So now, the combination talk radio has been missing. Until now, Carol Gold and Steve Clark taking you above the fray.
Hi, I'm Carol Gold, and welcome to Above the Fray. Steve Clark, are you with us tonight?
I'm here.
Okay, sounds good, Steve. Let me first apologize to our listeners because near my studio they're doing some construction as we speak. So you may be hearing some background noise. I'd rather not be there. Hopefully it won't be for the whole show. The number here is 914-803-4522 if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Steve, I'd like to start with George Stephanopoulos because, you know, to me, it's just astonishing. I want to say the hits just keep on coming, which is what I wrote in the chat room, meaning it's almost a scandal or a revelation a day. And, of course, today's is, and it reminds me, by the way, of something that happened once before in relation to the Clinton administration. George Stephanopoulos, probably the main, he's not the anchor of NBC Nightly News, but he is their go-to guy. He does Sunday with George Stephanopoulos, and he does Good Morning, the Good Morning Show, and he is their go-to guy.
I'm sorry, yes,
and he's their go-to guy when there's breaking news, and so it now turns out, and the noise is going to get really loud for a few minutes, everybody, it now turns out, it will go away, I promise, that he donated $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation. Now, there are several things wrong with this, but what really brought it to light was the Washington Beacon tracked this down because recently Stephanopoulos interviewed Peter Schweizer, who wrote the book that's now out called Clinton Cash, about all of the financial improprieties with the Clinton Foundation. And in that interview, George Stephanopoulos asked Peter Schweizer if he didn't have a partisan stake or a partisan bias, I forget what his exact words were. Steve, you may know. But he asked,
I don't know
whether
exact words.
It was a partisan something. I think it was a partisan interest is what he said in writing the book, meaning that Schweizer might be either a Republican or a conservative or whichever, and therefore he had a partisan interest. It is so hypocritical because here is a former Democratic operative, a member of the Clinton administration, someone who worked on the House floor for Dick Gephardt, noted Democrat, who has just given $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation. Now, I'm sure that George Stephanopoulos gave that money for the same reason that Arab sheikhs and Chinese officials are giving the Clinton Foundation tons of money, and that's because they want to buy access and influence. And so the hypocrisy that Stephanopoulos should try to do an interview where he appears to be neutral, not biased, and where he comes down and questions Schweizer's position relative to the book that he wrote, all the while knowing that he's given $75,000 to the Clinton Foundation. It hearkened me back. Do you remember when Sandy what was his name from the Clinton that took the documents out of the National Archives?
Sandy Berger.
Thank you. When Sandy Berger was caught leaving the National Archives with documents down his pants, literally, that probably had to do with Bill Clinton at the time. And what was said about that by the news media was that he was just sloppy. He was sloppy. They didn't say he was a thief. They didn't say he was a crook. They didn't say he was doing something to cover anything up. Who takes documents out of the National Archives literally down their pants, in the back of their pants? Who does that unless you're not being sloppy? You're being intentional and deliberate and trying to spirit away something. And the reason, Steve, before I turn this over to you, I know you've got thoughts, the reason it reminded me of Sandy Berger is because the media today, they're the right wing, of course, but anyone else, they're not coming down on ABC the way they came down on NBC when Brian Williams Or when Keith Olbermann was caught giving $1,000, he was suspended or he was fined. When Brian Williams made up lies that were clearly egoic in nature, he wasn't doing his from a partisan bias. He was an egomaniac who needed to sound like he was in the throes of the critical aspect of every story that he covered. And yet nobody really wants to come down on Stephanopoulos, who, you know, he backs off of the GOP debates that are coming up, but he doesn't back off of the Democratic debates, nor does he back off of the presidential debates when they happen, at least not yet. So through all of this, Steve, I know I've made a lot of points, and you can cover what you want, but through all of this, what I see is this ongoing continual refusal to take responsibility. And I don't mean Stephanopoulos. I'm talking about the media that everyone relies on. You know, and I hope, by the way, let me interject here. It's why our listeners come to this show, because it's really never about which side it is. It's just really about who has done what, who needs to take responsibility, who needs to be held accountable, and why aren't we getting that? And this is a typical example of why we don't get it. These are insiders protecting insiders. Steve?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of things that I find interesting. First is, there seems to be a revolving door that didn't exist before between government politicians and the media, and it seems like they go back and forth now. And really the role of the media is supposed to be kind of a watchdog for the government. But we now have the wolves watching the wolves, so to speak. There was an interesting article this week on ESPN that I think will illuminate the point, where, you know, commentators have made the point that especially the news media has become really left-wing, sports reporting has become really left-wing. And part of the problem with what they're saying is that if you really look at college athletes now, they go into college athletics, they for the most part, most of them become professional athletes, don't go to the schools, and so their education on reporting or news reporting is rudimentary at best. Then they make it to the highest levels, and then they're asked to opine on things that they really don't have any basic, they don't have any training for. They have a training in the sports, but not the training in asking the critical questions. And so a lot of their sports reporting has gotten hit pretty hard by the nature of the sloppiness of reporting. This is coming into question some of the athletes making statements about Baltimore. And I would say it's the same, but even worse, in the political spectrum, because the people are clearly educated. And I would think that they do know exactly what they're saying. And so when you see a Stephanopoulos making these claims, he's willfully and purposely misleading his viewers. They're completely opposite of a role of a journalist to report the news. And so, you know, I would say the essence of what we're seeing now is really kind of a misinformation or disinformation by the media. Carol, do you remember that story about Plato called The Cave? Do you remember that story?
I'm not sure. Refresh my memory.
Plato, the story about Plato and the cave is basically there's a bunch of people chained up into a cave, and there's puppeteers that basically, you know, all they can see are the shadows on the wall. And it's only after one of the prisoners escapes does he realize that the reality that the prisoners lived in and just seeing the world through shadows has been a fraud all along. That really, once he got out of the light and once he saw what the puppeteers were doing, he was never able to go back into the cave and tell them what was going to happen, because they would never believe it. The reason I bring up the story is it's very similar, right? We have a media, and the people are played off as puppeteers, the left versus the right. Democrats are good, Republicans are bad. And so they can't really see the puppeteers for what they are and who they are. And I think that's really what the tragedy is of this whole story.
Well, there are if you back away from politics a bit and you just look at it more philosophically or even more spiritually, there are people who are forever both in and out of religion, whether you talk about people that are deeply Christian or deeply in their Judaism, or you talk about mystics or you talk about astrologers, whatever you want to talk about. There are a whole bunch of people who say we live in an illusion. We live in the opposite of what's true. We live like where you develop black and white film. When you're standing in the development room and you're developing black and white film, the first thing you see is the reverse image. That's what comes up in the mixture to begin with. And in a way, we're living that. What's interesting about this time that we're living in, and granted, it's hard, Steve, and everyone's got their own challenges and their own issues, be they financial or cultural or safety-wise. There are a million ways your life can be stressful now. But at the same time, look at the transparency, whether people want to be transparent or not. We are really living in a time when it becomes very hard to keep secrets. Whether you are George Stephanopoulos or whether you are Julian Assange, and people have access to a tremendous amount of information that allow us to get probably the closest to the truth that we've ever been able to get. Because we realize something, that if you talk about the good old days, you go back to the 50s or the 60s or whatever you want to talk about, in reality, the things were probably just as corrupted. They simply were much better hidden. We didn't have the kind of media, mass media we have now. We didn't have the instant access. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have all of the means of revealing, of, as in religion they say, lifting the veil. We didn't have all of those means. And so, yes, it's difficult now because every day there's another story, and every day we know the media is complicit, and we know government's in bed with business, and it's all this tangled web. But the good news is that every day there's more and more revelation. And what that means to me, Steve, is that sooner or later, it's going to take a turn. And for this show, for tonight anyway, I'd rather not think in terms of terrorism or the end of the world or some catastrophe. I'd rather think in terms of we have a real opportunity to take a turn for the better, to take a turn for the more genuine, to live lives that have more personal integrity, more cultural integrity, if we're willing to look at everything, the stuff we like, the stuff we don't like, meaning if you're a Republican, you've got to listen to what Democrats say, and if you're a Democrat, you've got to listen to what Republicans say, and if you're not political, you've got to listen to people who are, and vice versa, and if you're an atheist, you've got to listen to the religious, and you get my message. What I'm saying is everybody's got a piece of this puzzle. And we can learn from each other, and we can grow through this transition, because that's what this is. This is some sort of human consciousness transition that we're living in. We can grow through it if we're willing to face facts. And so I think, for me, to take it back to the Stephanopoulos story, what should happen here is that ABC lets them go. That's in a world that isn't so politically corrupt, because he violated the ethics and the tenets of his own profession, journalism. He willfully, as you said, Steve, withheld information from his public, from his viewers, who come there allegedly for some semblance of an unbiased party to interview, whether he's interviewing a Democrat or a Republican, and that wasn't the case. So indulge me one more thing, Steve. It reminds me of this. When I was in law school, you know, everybody says, you know, lawyers, and there's so many lawyers in Congress, and they're all corrupt and blah, blah, blah. Well, let me tell you where it starts. When I was in law school, I'll leave out the long part of the story and get to the relevant part. I had a problem with a professor, or rather a professor had a problem with me. It wound up, I had to go to a hearing. I wound up hiring a private attorney who represented me in that hearing because my constitutional rights were being violated within law school. And the end of the story is that when this whole fiasco was over, and it was determined that I had done nothing wrong, and in fact the professor had done something wrong, another professor called me into his office, and he was there emeritus. He was there as a senior professor, and in fact he was a professor who had worked on the United States Code, the original United States Code. If you know anything about the USC, it's what governs all commercial transactions in this country. And this professor was one of the original authors of the USC. And so he called me into his office and he said to me, look, you've been through a rough time here. I know it. It shouldn't have happened. But here's the thing. Don't talk about it outside of law school. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, don't tell anybody what happened. Don't tell them about the complaint that was filed against you. Don't tell them about the hearing. Don't tell them about the adjudication, the verdict, or what was determined. Just forget it ever happened. And I said, why? And he said, you're going to be a lawyer. We don't tell on our own. I was older than the average law student at the time. I went to law school when I was 33. I did not see myself as naive, but that nearly knocked me over. Here was a professor emeritus, allegedly respected man in his field, and he was telling me to keep quiet because we don't tell on our own. And it's why lawyers don't tell on other corrupt lawyers, why lawyers don't talk about judges who are addicted to cocaine or who drink and get drunk at lunch, so you want to be in their courtroom in the morning, not in the afternoon. It's why ABC isn't doing what it should do with George Stephanopoulos, because you get clicks. You get professional clicks, and whether they're in government or they're in the private sector, they don't tell on their own, and it shouldn't be that way. You know, Steve, one more thing. Today, along these lines, a whistleblower testified for the Veterans Administration. He's been trying to get some corrections in the VA for several years, and every time he brought up the fraud and the waste and the poor treatment for veterans, he got pushed aside. So today, he came out as a whistleblower and testified before Congress. That's what people need to do in every aspect of their lives, whether they're revealing something that's corrupt governmentally or whether there's just deceit in your own life or in your neighborhood. You face the truth lovingly. You face the truth not accusatorily or judgmentally. You simply face the truth, and it's like turning a light on in a room.
Yeah, Carol, the thing that I'd like to address in the point that you're making that I think people are missing is I just finished reading Peter Schweitzer's book about the Clinton campaign and the stories behind
You read Clinton Cash?
Yes, I did. And one of the biggest things that was illuminating, and once I tell you, it's not so illuminating, but for me it was, is that the Clintons, the best example I'll give you is for Chelsea Clinton. Chelsea Clinton was given a job at NBC News and was paid an extraordinary amount of money, in the hundreds of thousands, for limited work.
She started at $200,000.
So for a very limited amount of work. And what people have now classified and looked at it and said, listen, what NBC did was the following. They paid money to her daughter in order to curry favor, in order to get interviews, in order to get scoops, in order to get inside information, and they were essentially buying access to the White House. So what Hillary's done and Bill have done is say there's a price for membership, and if you want access and you want access to the government and you want access to, on one hand, interviews, that's a price. If you want access to deals, that's another price. And so really the people that need to be probably investigated the most is the media class, the media who's actually reporting on the Clintons. They have a dirty little secret also. They've been playing the Clintons as well for that access. And there's no doubt in my mind George Stephanopoulos gave money. I'd highly doubt that ABC wasn't aware of that. And he was probably forced or decided that he wanted to pay to continue to get access to Hillary and Bill Clinton for all the contacts and the connections that they have. Essentially, it's a form of bribery that is we're forcing reporters in the journalistic press to pay the Clintons for that access. Think about that for a second. Do you think that the media is going to ask the hard questions that they've been paying the Clintons? No way. They're going to have the people bought and paid for. It's a way for George Stephanopoulos to continue his career and be seen as a wonder boy. But in the reality, the only people that's really being hurt is the people that he's supposed to represent, which is the people.
It's not just limited to the media. You know, in Congress, as I understand it, Steve, there are prices on what committee you get to sit on in Congress. You make contributions. You want those assignments once you're a new congressman or congresswoman. And even when you're not new, the seat that you get on the committee is bought, as are the chairmanships. That's 10 times more disturbing to me than the fact that the media is buying their way in as well. It is a symptom of a disease that we suffer from in this country, which is that it's not what you know, it's who you know, and it's how good your access. You know, many years ago, I founded a political action committee before I decided they were wrong, in essence, because they buy access. So the political action committee that I founded at the time was a pro-Israel political action committee. And it was a spin-off of one of the largest political action committees. It was pro-Israel in the country at the time. So the younger members, myself included, we wanted our own PAC because we were all young, and the PAC was really, it was comprised of an older generation. So we spun off like a baby PAC from that political action committee. And I remember the first time I went to Washington, D.C., under the auspices of the new PAC that we had founded. And I wanted to see two or three senators that particular day because there was an issue over whether or not Congress wanted to vote on whether it supported Jerusalem as the capital of Israel or whether the U.S. wanted to stay out of that and not come down on a side as to whether it would be Tel Aviv or Jerusalem. And it was an important issue to Israel, and so I was there on behalf of Israel, and so I was going to argue, you know, that Jerusalem needed to be the capital. But I had no appointment. But I got in to see senior senators in 25 minutes or less, because all I had to say was that I was with PennPAC, a former member of DelVal PAC, and that was it. I was in the office of a United States senior senator within 15 to 25 minutes with no appointment, and I was being listened to as if I had gravitas, as if I mattered. And I remember specifically that before I left for Washington, a young woman that I knew, her brother had been hit by a bus in Chicago, and it was hit and run, believe it or not, by a public bus. And he was in critical condition, and she called me, and she said, I know you're politically active, I know you're involved, I know you're going to D.C. next week, I think it was. She said, can you see what you can do? One of the senators that I saw that day was a senior senator from the state of Illinois. At the time, it was Paul Simon, actually. And I said to him as I was leaving, by the way, a friend of mine's brother, and I related the story, and I said it was hit and run, and apparently they don't know who did it, and they're not making any headway with the public transportation department. Can you see what you can do? It was 72 hours. The bus driver was arrested. And so what I learned that day is that if you have enough money and if you are well enough connected, you can get in. And while I was happy to help my friend, I wondered about all the people across the country who don't have access, who can't buy their way in because they don't have a pack or they can't contribute enough as individuals to gain that access. And back to your point, Steve, it's the press, it's the media that is supposed to be that fourth estate that keeps all that insanity in balance by revealing the truth of what it learns. But when you have a fourth estate like we have that is so in bed with the government, that is so owned and beholden to the government, when you have that situation, you've lost any control that there might be, any external third-party control that there might be. And so that's why we're in critical mass. And that's why things are so, why things seem so bad now in a way that they've never seen before, because the corruption, again, the good news, it's so revealed day by day. It's so apparent that something will have to happen and something will have to change. We cannot go on like this, and I'm ever an optimist, and so I believe that we will figure out how to change it for the better. If anyone's listening and you have any spare change, by the way, Matt Bevin is running for governor in Kentucky next week. And Matt Bevin is a former Secret Service agent. He's a former Marine. He is a guy with the utmost integrity. He tried to take out Mitch McConnell in the Senate race in Kentucky, and he was just pummeled. But if you want someone with integrity in politics and you've got $5 or a dollar to spare, go to Matt Bevin, MattBevin.com. Send him a dollar. Send him two. I say that only because we hunger for real leaders. We hunger for integrity. And what happens is when those people try to run for political office, the powers that be squish them like ants. So there's a chance in Kentucky for a really decent guy to win the governorship next week, and his name is Matt Bevin. Steve, I'm going to let you have the last few minutes. I know I've gone on and on. I had so much I wanted to say. So you take it, Steve.
Yeah. I think we're on the same point here, and like I said, I would just caution people when you look at the news and you see the news from any standpoint, from wherever you get, you have to realize that everybody has an agenda. And so before, in the past, the news, you know, just 20 years ago, was separated between the news and the editorial section. And really, I would say with the advent of, you know, from CNN to MSNBC and now Fox, really what we have is we've broken the media into, you know, kind of a right-left paradigm. And I think that's, believe it or not, I think that's a little bit of a better model, because at least the biases are out in front of people. But what I would say is the problem that we're still experiencing is what I would call the mainstream media, your nightly news and many of the papers, ABC, NBC, CBS, New York Times. They paint themselves as objective, and they're giving you the news from their standpoint of unbiased. And the reality, it isn't biased. They have a bias. They're just masking it. And I would really, you know, tell people, really, you know, test your biases, check your biases of what you believe and what you don't believe, because you really, a lot of the truths that have been explained to us or pitched to us is really propaganda. There's a big difference between opinion, and there's a big difference between what a fact is. And what the media tends to do is give their opinions on what they want you to believe, when in reality they're not facts, it's just opinions. So I would just caution everybody, it's not to say that my opinion is better or Carol's opinion is better or our facts are better, but at least realize the deception that's being fed to you. That's all I'm saying in this little speech here.
Well, I would say this, Steve. You said question what you believe, and I would say verify what you believe. I'm not going to tell you to verify what you believe about God. That is a belief system. But if you're walking around with beliefs about certain individuals in government or certain political parties, verify what you believe, because if you don't verify what you believe, you may be believing someone else's opinion that you heard. You know, I always say, if I tell you something, you can believe me or not believe me, but you can't know it until you check it out. You can't know it until you live it. Once you know it, it's within you. It's your own personal experience. The example I always give is the Bible doesn't say Adam slept with Eve. It doesn't say they had sex. It doesn't say they fornicated. It says he knew her. He knew her. That's the translation from the Hebrew. He knew her. And it says that because he had certainty they were one, and he had absolute certainty about what he knew of her. It wasn't based on a belief. It was based on a knowing, and that's what we all have to do. One final thing. We have an agenda here at Above the Fray. The agenda is we're tired of listening to manipulated facts. We want to convey to you as best we can the truth as we perceive it, the truth as we can determine it, and to empower you to believe that you can do the same thing for yourself. So thanks for listening. I'm Carol Gold.
I'm Steve Clark.
And this has been Above the Fray. Spread the word, everybody. This is a place to come with an agenda for truth and empowerment.
You've been listening to Above the Fray with Carol Gold and Steve Clark, from politics to the divine. Thanks for being a part of a new way to see the world. Visit our website at AboveTheFrayPodcast.com and like us on our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/AboveTheFray Podcast. This has been Carol Gold and Steve Clark, taking you always above the fray.